We are, as we all know, currently in the midst of a special time in the Christian calendar. We are in the season of Advent. And there are two things about Advent that I want to focus on this morning. Waiting and blessings. Now, I've been thinking a lot about this during this season. Advent, in my opinion, is probably not the best marketing tool for the church in terms of attracting new members and those unfamiliar with the church. Heck, it's probably not the best marketing tool to keep current members in the church happy because it is a season of waiting. In this age of instant everything, waiting is just not something we're inclined to do. Many years ago, when I was going through the paces of seminary, all the reading, all the hard work, all the meetings, all the internships, and so forth. One day, in a fit of frustration, this is something I really did, I typed a search on the word instant ordination. And with my finger hovering over a website to become ordained online, I was severely annoyed that someone can fill out a 30-second form for the Universal Life Church and hold the same credential that I do, that I had been working for 3 years to obtain. And so then I decided to type in instant more generally. And my web search came back with no less than 288 million hits. So apparently this word instant as a marketing word, we're onto something with that word. Now I didn't look at all 288 million websites, but I did look at a few of them. And they were boasting everything from mundane things like instant coffee to stranger things like microwavable turkeys. If only I'd known about that during Thanksgiving. And instant weddings, and of course, instant divorces online. I was intrigued, admittedly, by some of these things and bewildered by others. So I might have, maybe just a little bit, married John Calvin in an Insta wedding online, and then changed my mind and divorced him the same day in an Insta divorce online. Don't tell my family. This is something my parents do not know. But in all seriousness, these instant things, the instant wedding and divorce sites, were joke sites. But I'm sure the real equivalents exist somewhere. In fact, I know they do because in Las Vegas there are drive-thrus that you can literally drive through a drive-thru and leave married. And that speaks to the culture that we live in. The desire to resist the pain and the heartbreak of, and also the joy and accomplishment that go into navigating real human relationships, nurturing them over time, keeping them when things are hard, grieving when we lose them, and the complexity of trying to do our real lives with real humans. We can accomplish in this day and age, in less than 60 seconds, many things in life that others had to toil and sweat and work hard to obtain. And I think that changes people. There are many things that come to us anymore in a point and click in less than the time it takes to make a cup of coffee. So anyway, this kind of got me thinking about the question, is there anything in this life that's really worth waiting for? And what would that be? Because it would seem to me that everything your heart could possibly desire is only a mouse click and a credit card away. Again, from mundane things to seemingly sacred things. So I got to thinking about the last time in my own life when I waited for something, really anything. And to be honest, I had to think about that for a good little while. And it occurred to me that really the only time we wait for something is if we can't make that thing happen by ourselves, and thus the only alternative available to us is to wait. In other words, none of us really voluntarily or willingly waits by choice. And we're fickle creatures, so for us to be willing to wait for something, it has to be really, really good. We have to consider it vital to our lives. So the last time that I remember waiting for something in this sense of the word, I was about 8 years old. When I was a little girl, I wanted a pet, something fierce. I wanted it deep in my bones. I wanted to have a cat or a dog. I wanted a kitten or a little puppy. But my father's and one of my sister's was terribly allergic. And so these dreams of mine were dashed. I was told in no uncertain terms that I would have to wait until I was a grown-up and had my own house before I could get a cat or a dog. But I would not be thwarted. I was so desperate for a cuddly little creature to call my own, and I was just determined to get one. So I guess I might have took my cue from St. Francis of Assisi, because I became Marcy, the neighborhood patron saint of wounded animals. I would troll the neighborhood in search of wounded bunnies and birds and stray kittens, essentially any cute little furry thing that I could find, and then I would bring them into my garage under the stealth of night when my family was kind of in the house or when I could sneak them in, or I would hide them in the basement and attempt to nurse these little creatures back to health. So the thing is, at eight, I really did not have a veterinary license or the training necessary to do that. So this whole scenario was pretty pathetic. Because I would sneak these animals in and then be discovered, you know, within a 24 to 48 hour period that we had some guests living in our home. And my parents took pity on this project and rarely balked at the revolving door of wounded bunnies and birds who lived in boxes in our garage. And 90% of the time, these little animals didn't live more than 2 or 3 days. And I would cry, and my parents would console me and tell me to lift my little chin up and then send me back out into the world. But then one afternoon, I found a stray kitten, and he was marvelous. He was a beautiful, regal gray kitten, just gray all over his body, and I named him Smokey. And Smokey was injured, but not terribly so. And I went to my parents, and I begged them to let me keep Smokey. I begged them with the crocodile tears of, at this point, a 9-year-old whose whole world revolved around one goal, having her own cuddly pet. And they said no, but they did say that I could take Smokey to the vet, and they'd pay to help me nurse. I could put in my allowance money, and then they would meet me halfway and pay to nurse Smokey back to health until we found him a good home. And I will never forget the day my dad came home from the vet with me. I hadn't been in the room. I had waited out. My dad had taken the cat in. And I remember him sitting me down and saying we needed to talk. And I remember him scooping me up and putting me on his lap. And this is something that was becoming rarer and rarer as I moved toward adolescence. His lap was no longer a place for a little girl to sit and have story time. It was a place I only retreated to when the world was too much. And I remember with a quavering voice and misty eyes when my dad explained to me that Smokey was sick. In fact, Smokey was very sick. He had the final stages of feline leukemia, and he had to make the decision to put the cat down. And I was inconsolable. It was one of the few moments in my life that I've ever seen my dad cry. And shortly after that, I quit bringing wounded animals home. I reconciled myself to the fact that I would have to wait until I was a grown-up. I'd have to wait 9 or 10 years to own a pet, which seemed like an eternity to a 9-year-old at the time. I mean, that was twice the amount of life that I had lived. And that was the first time that I had really wanted something and realized that I had no power to get that thing for myself, that literally the only alternative was to wait and to let the spark of this desire kind of fan the flame in my heart and to keep this goal before me. And then one day, an ordinary day, by all accounts, shortly before my 11th birthday, my parents called me into the living room and they said they wanted to give me one of my gifts a little early. And they walked me over to the garage, and there, when I opened the door, was a beautiful tortoiseshell cat with a cinnamon swirl color on her body. My sister had been getting allergy shots for over a year in preparation for the arrival of this cat. And they managed to keep it a secret. And my father put his own allergies and discomfort aside in order to give me this gift. And my mom had casually been visiting cat rescue shelters for that year until she found the perfect little cat for me. And my parents gave me a blessing that year that I couldn't have given myself. And it absolutely was worth waiting for. Cinnamon, the beautiful tortoiseshell cat, lived for 20 plus years as a beloved member of our family. She lived, in fact, until I was in my early 30s. And Cinnamon taught me a whole lot about waiting and blessings. Cinnamon taught me what it is to want something that you know you don't have the power to give yourself, and what it's like after the end of a period of seamlessly endless waiting to be offered such a good and beautiful gift. Cinnamon, for the 20 plus years that she lived, was a constant reminder to me of God's grace, with her little yellow eyes that always seemed to find me in the darkness, who, despite her arthritic old body, would still go up the stairs and find the foot of my bed and sleep and watch over me while I slept. And now this brings us back here to Advent and the biblical text. Just to recap, the second text I read was about a 90-year-old woman and her husband who were promised something absolutely impossible. They were promised a child who would be to them God's rich blessing. Now, for anyone who has ever struggled to have a child, you know the depth of yearning, of wanting something, of longing for something, of knowing that you would be a wonderful parent and that you would create a wonderful and loving home, but your body is not willing to cooperate. But there are forces outside of you and bigger than you who would make this seemingly impossible. They were promised a child who would be to them a sign of God's blessing, and the beginning of a blessing so amazing that it wouldn't just touch them, that it would trickle down and touch the nations for generations to come. A blessing that would result in descendants as numerous as the stars. A blessing that would take scarcity, a moment of scarcity, and turn it into a rich, deep abundance for the whole world. But the part of the story that I didn't tell you just yet is that Abraham and Sarah spent a long time waiting. It was implied in Sarah's age, but I'm sure more than a few times they thought that this promise would never come true. I'm sure more than a few times they felt so desperate that they tried to bring the promise into being by themselves. They had other children by various means, and the point of the story is not that those other children are not blessed or are not blessings, but that's a sermon for a different day. The point is that God made a promise to Sarah and Abraham that Sarah would have a child, and God is the keeper of covenant promises. So the text picks up with these excerpts of Genesis 21. And so I want to read a little bit of Genesis 21. Now the Lord was gracious to Sarah, as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah what he had promised. And Sarah became pregnant and bore a son to Abraham in his old age, at the very time God had promised him. And Sarah said, God has brought me laughter. And everyone who hears about this will laugh with me. Sarah laughed. Sarah laughed the knowing laughter of a mother who had waited and waited with anticipation for the one thing she couldn't give herself, the promised child. We too are children and heirs of a promise. And Sarah's laughter is not unlike what I imagine the laughter of clumsy shepherds to be, who went tearing across a field to get even just a peek of the Christ child. It was not unlike the waiting of wise men who followed a star because they knew that at the end of that star, lying in the manger, they would find the truth. It's not unlike the mess of laughter and tears that overcame a little girl who finally saw the deepest longing of her heart fulfilled when on one glorious day, a little cinnamon swirled cat jumped into her lap and secured a place into her heart forever. It's not unlike the laughter of a heavenly chorus singing out into infinity, glory to God and peace on earth, because the Christ child, the Messiah, the Prince of Peace is coming. Nighttime is about to give way, and the day spring, the morning from on high, is about to come and give light to those who dwell in darkness and is about to guide our paths in the way of peace. Advent, my friends, is a time of waiting and glorious expectation. And there are some things in this life that are just worth waiting for. The truest longings of our heart are not the things that we can give ourselves at the click of a mouse and a credit card. In fact, the truest things are often the things that we cannot give ourselves. And it is the truest thing of all is the one who was given to us in a manger in a little backwater town 2,000 years ago. He is the one for whom we wait during Advent. Amen.